This is Scott Becker with Becker's Healthcare. We're doing a special episode today to discuss coronavirus and telehealth. We've got one of the nation's leading experts on the phone related to interconnected care, virtual care, telehealth, Krista Drobeck. Krista, can you take a moment to introduce yourself? Then I'll ask you a few questions about coronavirus and telehealth.
I'm Krista Drobeck. I'm the executive director of the Alliance for Connected Care, which is a coalition based in Washington that focuses on advocacy around telehealth and remote patient monitoring.
Well, thank you. And just a quick moment. You're in D.C. Everybody's obviously talking about coronavirus. Just a couple moments on coronavirus and then why telehealth is so related to this and could be such an important part of it, and what has to happen to make that happen?
So the supplemental funding for coronavirus has taken center stage here in Washington. The Trump administration requested $2.5 billion. Negotiators in the House and Senate are on the verge of a bipartisan package that is closer to $7 or $8 billion in emergency funding. There are pieces of that bill that are not necessarily just increases in funding. For example, Chuck Schumer wanted to see a guarantee in that bill that whatever vaccine comes out is affordable for seniors. So there's going to be some policy items that are part of it, even though it is an appropriation bill.
How does telehealth and virtual care play into all of this?
So one of the key recommendations by the CDC and frankly the World Health Organization and other governments around the world is don't congregate in crowded places, and waiting rooms in hospitals and community health centers can be crowded. And especially if it's a bad flu season, or in this case, if coronavirus becomes a pandemic. And experts have been recommending that people not go in person. In fact, I got an email from one medical, our family provider, who told us, who said, don't come here if you think you have coronavirus, because we don't want people congregating in the waiting rooms and could cross-infect each other. So we have some telehealth barriers in this country that prevent particularly seniors from accessing telemedicine. There has been tremendous success in China and other countries in using telehealth. So there is a coming together in Washington, a recognition that telehealth has to be easy and accessible for people if the pandemic does come. The American Hospital Association and the American Nurses Association sent a letter to Congress yesterday saying that telehealth tools have to be included in the supplemental. There was also a joint op-ed by Intermountain Health, Stanford Health, and MedStar yesterday calling on Congress to ensure that telehealth is accessible. So there is a growing voice of folks, stakeholders, saying Congress needs to put some telehealth provisions into the coronavirus package.
And how do these packages not get weighted down with all kinds of special interest in politics? And just, I asked that question partially for the comment you made about Chuck Schumer, wanting to make sure this is in it. How do they work on these huge mega packages and then make sure they get executed in a rational way?
Yeah, I would be surprised to see that vaccine provision in the legislation, because it does touch a very controversial topic of, you know, quote unquote, price controls for pharmaceuticals. But we have a provision that we've been advocating for that makes completely natural sense, which is we should give the secretary the authority to lift the telehealth restrictions in Medicare for public health emergencies. So I think as long as there is really a clear policy line between coronavirus and, you know, the recommendation, that it does get into the mix. So our provision is already an introduced bill. It's a bipartisan bill. It's a bicameral bill. It was introduced after the wildfires in California. And essentially what it says is, if there's a declared public health emergency, the Secretary of Health and Human Services should be able to waive the Medicare restrictions on telehealth so that seniors can receive telehealth from their physicians and their physicians can get paid for it. So that didn't pass. And now we're saying this is a perfect time to pass it because seniors are particularly vulnerable if they get coronavirus. So we need to be able to have access for them to medical care.
No, absolutely. And it's extremely scary for everybody, and particularly seniors and other people with all kinds of symptoms and other challenges and health challenges and compromised immune systems. What a scary thing. And the hope is, I mean, and I guess nobody senses it even in any other sense, that hopefully this all sort of fades away over a few months and becomes more of a something that doesn't become a world-ending pandemic, that it sort of fades away like lots of bad flu situations or swine flu or bird flu or other things have over the years. And it's an impossible question to ask. But any thoughts on where this is all going?
Well, from our, small policy window, it's really important for the Secretary of Health to have authority to waive rules during times of emergencies. So there's always going to be another emergency. So if corona does fade away, we're going to have something else in the future. And the Secretary of Health and Human Services has the authority to waive stark laws, HIPAA, the conditions of participation for hospitals. And I worked in the Obama administration during H1N1, and we spent a lot of time thinking through the conditions of participation for hospitals. How do we allow a hospital to put up a tent in their parking lot and have it still be considered a healthcare facility? So no matter what happens with coronavirus, we still need all these tools in the toolbox to create the flexibility to handle the kind of volume that we might end up seeing in the future.
Let me ask you a question about that, because you mentioned the H1N1, and the latest stats I saw on that was that something like 60 million people got infected with H1N1. It ended up being that the mortality rate was just something like 0.02%, so twice the rate of the regular flu, but not the 1% to 2% people are seeing with this. What was the initial sort of panic or concern in D.C. about H1N1? And why has this caused such a different level of panic and everything in this country and throughout the world? How do you look at those things?
There was an absolute 100% focus on H1N1 at HHS because we didn't know. I mean, they almost shut down the country of Mexico over it. And obviously, Mexico is a lot closer than China. So there was a much bigger chance that H1N1 was going to really become a pandemic in the United States. So we were all hands on deck. And I know the administration now over there is all hands on deck. And we've been telling our clients who have other issues in front of the department that, don't expect to get a response in a timely manner because, they've got this major issue on their hands and they need to pull everyone in. So, there are lines of authority, and usually it's the Assistant Secretary for preparedness that is the lead, and they just made that person the lead yesterday. So they're really, I think, doing the things that need to be done to oversee this. But there was a panic for H1N1 for sure, especially how close to home it was.
And it turned out that 60 million plus people were infected in the U.S., so it was not insignificant, but it turned out to have a mortality rate that wasn't nearly as bad as, initially people were concerned about with that.
Yeah, if it's 2%, I mean, that's the same as the 1918 Spanish flu. I mean, that's a really scary thought. So
that is. But they're starting to, I saw something out of Johns Hopkins yesterday that they're starting to look at it as probably a much lower mortality rate. And let's hope that's true based on the concept that there's so many undetected viruses. So the 2% was original numbers out of those that were known, but that the real number is that there's so many more people that have this. And so the real mortality rates are much lower. And let's just hope that's the case.
Exactly. And if that's true, and it does just fade away, it will be a good lesson that we've all learned about washing our hands. Maybe we'll have a better flu season next year.
So true. Let's hope for the best. Krista, I always enjoy getting a chance to visit with you. You're just brilliant, and you're on point, and you're very clear in your thinking. So I appreciate you joining us so much Thank you very
much. Thanks for having me. Thank you.